views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
On this Sunday night, September the 20th, 2015, and we are here with our Black Talk Sunday night, talking all things Black. Brother Scotty was just on previously, and I did hear Brother Scotty speaking about how we can write in about Brother Iman Jameer Alameen's health. And let me see, I think I have the fax number, but I don't have that other phone number. So, Brother Scott, if you could share this with us, whenever you get a chance. But that fax number to call in for Iman Jameer Alameen, also known as H. Rap Brown, 570-488-8130. That's 570-488-8130.
Greetings to you, sister.
Please.
Hey, greetings to you, Sister Black Rose. That telephone number is 570-488-8000. That phone number is 570-488-8000. If you want to get also the address where you can write him and send him some words of encouragement, in addition to calling the prison and demanding he be given immediate adequate medical attention, you can find that information. It's on POWmedicaljustice.com. That's POWmedicaljustice.com, and you can find it under the section Support Political Prisoner. Under Action Alert. It's under Action Alert. And I'll have also linked it to our program description for Political Prisoner. So thank you for asking, because, you know, it's wrong for anyone to forget those who have struggled for us and are suffering as a result of their activities in Black liberation.
I certainly agree with you, and I will do my due diligence and make the call, and I'll go on the website, and I will look for the address, too, and I will send my letter. I sure will, and I will encourage everybody else, too. So you have that. You have the fax number. You have the phone number, and go online. We'll repeat that tonight later on throughout the show so the people can definitely write in, because we did have a show also on Brother Jameer, Iman. So yeah, I like what you said, Scotty. We can't forget what these brothers and sisters have done, and we shouldn't just cast them to the wayside like that after they've given their lives and they're serving time in jail, unjustly, political prisoners, should be out here still being able to be free. Brother Jameer, he was cleaning up the neighborhood, doing excellent work, as a lot of our brothers and sisters were doing when they were either killed or arrested or harassed or something like that. So just support Iman Jameer Alameen. 570-488-8130 is the fax number to call and demand that he is receiving the health treatments that he needs. 570-488-8000 is the phone number. And don't forget about Mumia also. He's suffering from some serious illnesses. Skin is looking scaly. You know, these brothers in prison, they're feeding them anything. They're treating them any kind of way. And some of these brothers are innocent, and they have to suffer. It's bad enough as it is for them to have to be imprisoned because of good works that they were doing, not as if they were actually arrested for doing anything injurious to anyone.
And if they were, Sister Rose, if they were, if somebody trying to kill me, I have a right to self-defense. And like we just got through talking about on that show, COINTELPRO, they were assassinated. Fred Hampton, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., they were out here assassinating these brothers and sisters. They tried to kill Sister Asada. So if they ended up killing one of these neo slave catchers out here that was trying to assassinate them, I don't look at that as no crime. I look at that as it's self defense of being intelligent. So
it is.
Mhm.
It is. We have to defend ourselves. Don't let anybody just come and kill you for nothing. My goodness. So definitely. Thank you, Brother Scotty. You doing okay? You doing better?
Yes, ma'am. I'm feeling a whole lot better physically, and the work continues. The work continues. So I don't like to complain, even though I have a lot to complain about. But it's a lot of people doing worse than me, so I take it all in stride.
I know that's right. I know. We just have to keep on pushing. Wake up and roll with the punches. Roll with the punches. So stay strong and stay black, and we will win because we're already winning. We're already winners, and we'll continue to win. We have a great guest in tonight, a good friend of mine named Brother Henry Brown. And so let me just open up your mic and welcome you in, Brother Henry. Hello. Greetings. Hello. Welcome to the Lotus Place.
Greetings. Hello, Black Power. How you doing?
I'm well. We finally were able to coordinate our schedules and have you on. It's so great to have you here. I always love your wisdom and information that you share. You have a couple of Facebook pages, and you have the community pages, and you have all of this information that you have people posting and that you share. I get your group text messages. You send me all kinds of information, and I really appreciate it. You just want to let people know a little bit about your background, and you can say something about the Facebook pages so people can find out more about you. Okay.
Well, I'm in my late 20s. I traveled the world. I lived in multiple countries. I am a veteran. I grew up around like the Black movement, here in California. We have a thing that's called the Good Life. As a young kid, I was able to be around Steve Coakley, Dr. Rakona Rashidi, of course, Dr. Claude Anderson. My family does business with him, and so on and so forth. The pages that I have on Facebook, we have Wake Up, Kushites and Commission, Black Events Los Angeles, and Justice is Needed page. And each of these pages are to wake up the lost tribe of Shabazz, the 12 or 13 tribes of the Hebrew Israelites, all the Pan-Africans, RBGs, the Moors, Nubian Moors, so on and so forth, all melanated African descent people. I have to make that distinction.
Mm-hmm. Wow, seems like you've, I didn't know you've been all around the world like that. We'll have to talk more about that. That's one of my goals, is to engage in some extensive travel, especially to the homeland. I just want to go through the homeland and
we're planning a trip to go to, I believe, a Sudan. That's where my mom's side of the family's from. So I'm planning to make a pilgrimage to Sudan or Kush, that region of the Africa. I just want to say real quick, it was back in June. I believe it was June or July. And Del Zeno of the Black Business Network, he came to Los Angeles to our Caras Unity Center. He delivered a powerful, powerful speech of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. And I just want to say, I have learned some things that most people do not know, because Del Zeno is from Panama. And if anybody knows anything about the QAnon movement, it started in Harlem, New York, but he wanted to start in Jamaica. They had Liberty Hall all over the United States, and I believe a few in the United Kingdom, Africa, and Central America and the Caribbean Islands. Well, Del Zeno's grandfather worked with Marcus Garvey. So he has some information that he had delivered that most, that is not in any book. You would have to get it exclusively through him. And also, too, Dr. Garvey III, or Marcus Garvey III, was able to hear some of his stuff. And, and I just want to say, you know, I noticed many people in general, especially here in Los Angeles, we always hear about black and brown pride or minorities, black and minorities. Going to their lectures, it has shown me that we have to be black first before we unify with anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Marcus Garvey was, he has the United Negro World newspapers, Steamboat, Black Star Line, all this good stuff, right? He had a military. He had an Air Force. A lot of people don't even talk about that. He had bombs. He had weapons. He had an Air Force and an army. And inside the military, they had women and children. The children was to decipher codes and relay messages. The women were
the children.
Right. And the women, right. And the women were medevac, and it was trained to shoot and also to drive, and they was also part of the military as well, the women. They was like the drivers, and they was like nurses and doctors as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he employed, I forgot how many thousands of Africans in Harlem.
And you know, there was such a sense of pride when people would, I remember reading, there was a sense of pride when people would put on their uniforms for the parade and march with Garvey. And it just uplifted so many people in Harlem and around the world.
Right.
Especially, I think, in Louisiana, I think is one of the places where one of the largest Garvey chapters was. I think it was Louisiana. And Queen Mother Moore followed Garvey from Louisiana to Harlem.
And guess what? One of Garvey's mentors was Booker T. Washington. That's the one who debated W.E.B. Du Bois, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just the last person was on, I heard him say COINTELPRO. Okay, perfect. J. Edgar Hoover paid W.E.B. Du Bois to go over to Liberia to tell the President King and Liberia at that time not to sell 2 million acres to Marcus Garvey. This is why the red, black, and green was invented. It was to have our own national, our nation's flag on our own land for the free Africans in America to go to have a country of their own back in Africa. Marcus Garvey had an agreement with the President King of Liberia to sell him 2 million acres of land.
Yeah,
they trumped up some charges. They trumped up some charges
against Garvey.
Go ahead. I didn't hear
quite a while. I was just commenting on the statement with W.E.B. Du Bois and his confliction with Marcus Garvey. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that land, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was sold to a Dutch company, a Dutch rubber company that still own that land to this day. They trumped up some charges against Marcus Garvey. They took pictures and said he was, I believe it was false advertising or like selling stocks or something that he didn't own. Well,
mail fraud.
Mail fraud, but he actually was getting ready to purchase and then some other stuff that he did own. So they trumped up some charges because his following was so strong, they could not execute him and kill him. They just had to exile him. And then I believe they rose $4 million for Garvey. Now, here's the thing. We should learn from our past. We don't need followers. We need participants. The movement should have kept going. When Garvey went away or got exiled, somebody should have stepped up and kept the movement going. We have too many, to me, in my personal opinion, we have to clean house before we worry about anybody else. Well, I say that every time we get a plan that is devised, that is concise, that we can move forward on, it's always another black person that's going to sell us out for pennies, kibbles, and bits. That is the problem. Now, here's another problem. Many black people want to be successful and equal in a system that is built on your oppression. Capitalism requires someone to stay on the bottom. That is not righteous, and that is not of God, and that's not equality. Marcus Garvey wants to separate and create his own. Marcus Garvey was already doing it. I don't understand why most people want to reinvent the wheel. All we have to do is just pick up where he left off.
You know, now, many people argue that we could just pick up the blueprint left by Marcus Garvey, combine them with Dr. Claude Anderson and so many other people that have actually laid out a blueprint for us, Malcolm X. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We can just pick up, learn their lessons, pick up their blueprints, and probably really can move forward in advance. But what do you think is the holdup? What is the problem? Why aren't more people, listening to Dr. Claude Anderson? Like he promotes the fishing industry. And why don't we pick back up that blueprint that Marcus Garvey left? And why don't we listen to Dr. Amos, I believe. I think he
Amos,
didn't have
for black power.
Yeah,
black power. I'm gonna tell you why.
Fear, ignorance, no confidence. Fear is that everybody's afraid to die, transition. Another fear is people don't want their loved ones hurt. I have posted a video, I think it's up to 50,000 views. Ice Cube was down with Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, and something happened and they fell out. And from what I hear, he was spreading. And so he pulled out the nation, and this is why he's a Sunni Muslim now, no longer nation, associated with the nation. So fear. When I say fear, if you have a child or a husband and wife, you don't want them to be hurt. So they don't have to get you, they can get your family out of fear. The diet. If you look at chips, cookies, crackers, anything you think of that is not raw food, 9 times out of 10, they have some soy products, soy oil, soybean oil, soy byproducts. That's another thing. The tool is in the diet. And then if your body's electromagnetic, your brain operates off of hexadecimals, binary codes, ones and zeros, frequency, sound. We have television, cell phones, radio. They can send signals to you. If you go to Google, you type up scalar weaponry. This is not no debate. This is not no conspiracy.
Could you repeat
they
that?
Have scalar? A brain to
Could you repeat that? You said scalar weaponry?
Yeah, scalar weaponry. And then on the BBC News, on their website, you can look up what is called a brain decoder. People always say you can't read my mind. Well, the government can, because your body is one and your brain is 1-0. Everything, even the sound, the language we're talking. It's not even a language, it's a dialect. But the dialect we're talking is 1s and 0s, is vibration. So with the brain decoder, if they have a brain decoder, you don't think they have a brain encoder? See, we only know what they tell us. Everything that we know, most things, not everything, excuse me, that's a bad term. Most things that we do know is secondhand information at best. Even if you were to say, the pyramid, such and such, nobody knows when it was constructed. Nobody knows. The best you can do is radiocarbon date the erosion on the sediment on the rock around the pyramid at best. So people say 3,000 years BC, 4,000. Nobody knows. It could be 100, a million years. Nobody knows. So fear. And then the other one I was saying, confidence. When we see everybody selling out, everybody shucking and diving. I seen a picture of 50 Cent hugged up with Caitlyn Jenner or Bruce Jenner and Young Buck standing to the side, like in disgust. When people see that subconsciously, you're going to feel defeated. Like with them, if everybody's selling out, what can I do? Mm. You feel hopeless. Mm-hmm. And then two, and the other one is as well is complacency. The European and the Arab, because first of all, people neglect the 1,200 year of Arab slave trade. I just wrote a paper on that in my college, and that got me A+ on it. And they want me to deliver a speech for it, for the 1,200-year Arab slave trade. And then we have the 600-year European slave trade. Even to this day, we're debit slaves. Slaves to your job, slaves to your bills, credit. This capitalism is slavery. You can never be...
It is.
Even if you got $1 billion, Bill Cosby got $1 billion, Oprah Winfrey got $1 billion, they cannot do what they want. That's a drain, $800 million. He has to give what, $50 million to the, or $70 million to USC. Then he turned around and donated the royalties to the Compton soundtrack, the movie that just came out, to the Compton Center, and the Compton Center is multicultural. Compton is mostly Mexican. Don't let nobody tell you different. I'm here, I'm seeing it with my own two eyes. When you include every other race, like Dr. Claude Anderson said, minority is basically giving them your power. If Native Americans, hear me out, Indians, Native Americans, the Redskins, I'm not talking about the old men, I'm talking about the Cambodians, the Cross Bering Strait 6,000 years ago, the Redskins, Native Americans, if they was to integrate multicultural, if they was to fight for everybody else's rights, they wouldn't have the little crumbs that they have now. The little rundown, reservations, the little few thousand dollars they get, to go to school or the rest of their life as a Native American. The reason why I'm saying that is the Japanese, right? Wasn't they forced into some kind of concentration camps? And the government gave them $25,000 each. The reason why I'm bringing this up is, as an African, black people in America, Kushite, whatever you want to call it, we do not need to integrate with nobody. Dr. Carl Anderson said it out of his mouth in one of his speeches. I can't remember exactly. But they have wrote inside the Constitution and inside the government, in order to free a slave, you have to give them something, resources to compete with. You can't just free the slave. So they have, it's still on his book to this day. They have laws that is set aside for Africans, exclusively for Africans. And this is why he has a team of 7 Jewish lawyers and he's getting ready to go to fight for reparations and repatriation. And I was at his new book release last year over here at the Carson Community Center when he gave that speech. And he told us not to film it. Because he had dropped some other science. Yeah, he told us not to film it, and he had dropped some other signs about space. You know, scientists have found a new, what they call as God, some kind of black matter that can attract and expel objects, and they call that God. And most people don't even know unless you're into science heavily and astronomy and stuff like that. Another thing, too, is we have the means to create our own reality. Dr. Amos Wilson, you change it. Change your consciousness to change reality, right?
Yeah.
When I sent you a couple of days ago, is they have books. You can build energy, utility, sufficient, self-sufficient home for less than $2,000. You can go to meetup.com. You can join a class. And how it works is whoever wants their house built, they pay for all the materials and all that stuff. The people that's in that group, they help build the house, they get the experience, and a person who pays for all the materials get their house built.
Yes. You know, yes. When we come back after our break, that's one of the topics that I want to go into, living off the grid and building these sustainable homes, because that is something that I keep talking about. I keep stressing to people, get out of these mortgages. Don't get into a mortgage. Buy a container home, buy an old bus. I know, like, I'm here in Texas, and if you drive up I-10, there are all kinds of places where you can buy these train containers, used train containers, used school buses. You get these buses and these containers out. They have different companies that will refurbish those containers and buses and turn them into a home. And, you know, this is something that people can do for homeless people, they can do for themselves, small families, large families, it does not matter. You can stack those containers up. You can take one or two containers and make yourself a home and not have a mortgage. All you have to do is pay your taxes on your land if you own the land. But when we come back, I definitely want us to talk about that. And I also want to go into, I want to ask you a couple of things. Oh, yes, we just got a message about, he said scalar weaponry. Spell scalar. How do you spell that? Someone wants to look it up.
I think it's S-C-A-L-A-R, weaponry.
Okay.
And what happens is they have sound cannons. They can cook your whole inside with your external look like it's undamaged.
Yes, I've heard about that because they were trying to use some type of sound control mechanisms during the Ferguson riots that would just completely destroy your hearing for the rest of your life.
That's what you hear about. What you don't hear about is when the white people have riots and they have sound cannons that disperse the crowd that they don't talk about. But when we come back from the break, we'll talk about all that, because white on white crime is way worse than black on black crime.
It certainly is, and I'm going to play this video from the young man. His name is CJ something. CJ is a 13-year-old black young conservative boy in Georgia, and he had a video. He posted a video where he was pretty much slamming President Obama about the young man here in Texas, Ahmed, that built the clock, and he was detained at the detention center and all of this because his teacher thought the clock was a bomb. And so the young man posted this video slamming Barack Obama about inviting the young Ahmed to the White House. So I want to talk about that when we come back, and also dig into some more topics. I just want to pick your brain, like on voting, black people in voting, and we'll talk more about the sellout. So let's just take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Okay, and we are back. Let me just play this little quick video of this young boy, CJ. It's 2 minutes long. So let me just play that, and then we'll come right back. You, Brother Henry?
Let me go this quick, given all honesty, I've been having to do this quick and see my mind. Now, Mr. President, when T-Town was gunned down by the immigrant, you didn't do anything. You didn't even call the family. You didn't invite them to the White House. Is that okay? I don't think so, Mr. President. And to go even further, Mr. President, when cops were being gunned down, you don't invite their family to the White House. You never did. But when a Muslim kid builds a clock, well, come on by. What in this world that you're living in? You know, when the shooting in Chattanooga happened, it took you longer to lower the clock perhaps back than it took you to light the White House in rainbow colors after the SCOTUS decision, legalizing gay marriage. Mr. President, what are your priorities here? What are your priorities? Because in all honesty, I think you're being ignorant, I think you're incompetent, and I think you don't understand reality. The reality of the situation is that you don't get invited to the White House for building a clock. I'm sorry. I hate to be harsh, but it's the blatant truth. He's a Muslim kid. He fits into your agenda, so you're going to go ahead and invite him. That's great for you. And Mr. President, these people were gunned down. Innocent. Kate Stanley was innocent. She didn't do one thing. This man was deported. He lived in a sanctuary city, so he was able to run free. And that was all for Mr. President. And it goes further in Chattanooga. It was because of you, Mr. President, that these brave men and women weren't able to carry their guns in the military base. Once again, your fault, Mr. President. And to go even further than that, Mr. President, cops are being gunned down every single day because of your actions. Because you're seeking to appease terrorists, domestic terrorists, and those domestic terrorists are the Black Lives Matter movement. And you think, Mr. President, that I'm going to respect you? How am I going to respect you when you don't respect the brave men and women and innocent people who lost their lives because of your involvement? I'm sick and tired of it. I'm going to be American people, aren't you? Thank you.
All right, and that was little CJ. Let me play this one quickly where he speaks about Ferguson.
Hey, y'all. CJ Pearson here. And today I really wanted to dive into the issue of Ferguson and really talk about really everything surrounding this issue. I think everyone here will agree that Ferguson is and was a tragedy. A tragedy that needs to be prevented in the future. And with that being said, I think it's something that we need to move forward. We need to realize that it is 2015. It's not 1964. It's not 1860. But it's 2015. And we need to realize that we must move forward. And we're not going to move forward if we're continuing to spur hatred across the streets of America. And we're not going to move forward if we continue to say, well, Black Lives Matter. Because in all honesty, Black lives, they do matter. So do white lives, though. So do Hispanic lives, so do Asian lives, so do Indian lives, and so do Mexican lives. They all matter. Each and every one of them, they all have a place in America. We're a nation of immigrants. Well, we should be a nation of illegal immigrants. We are a nation of immigrants, where every single American matters, and every single racial, ethnic group, every religion, everyone matters. And to say that people really don't care about Black lives really is downright stupid. Isn't Barack Obama president? Do Black lives not matter then? Isn't Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court? Do Black lives not matter then? Huh? Yeah, totally. The left is, yeah, y'all are smart people. But here's the thing. All lives matter. We need to move forward. And to be violent and to just be obstructionist in Ferguson is just downright stupid. Why is it stupid? Because if we want to move forward, we need to preach equality. Equality, it's not a partisan issue. It's bipartisan. And we need to realize that. And we need to deal with the big issue. The big issue isn't cops killing blacks, but it's blacks killing blacks. I can say that because I guess, I can say that. Why? Because if you look at the statistics, your chance of getting shot by a black guy is much stronger than you getting shot by a cop. And if you really want to deal, if black lives really, really do matter, we need to deal with the problem in our own community. And that problem in our community is blacks killing blacks. And that's something we need to stop now. We need to realize that if we really want to look out for each other, if we want to see each other succeed, we can't kill each other. The chance of a cop killing us is much lower. And we were law-abiding citizens. If we didn't get in trouble and we didn't do anything to look suspicious, then we wouldn't even have the chance of getting killed by a cop. Come on. Here's the thing. The problem is black killing blacks. And that's what we need to realize. And we need to deal with that issue as soon as possible. But at the same time, we, as Americans, need to stand up for equality. And we need to stop throwing race into every issue. Because Michael Brown, he did steal. he did attack Officer Wilson, and if you so want to disagree with that, I highly recommend that you read the testimony and the evidence in the case, and that you actually read the open details of the trial that were released by the prosecuting attorney over in Ferguson about surrounding the case. And you'll see that this little hands up, don't shoot mess is completely untrue. It's a fallacy because his hands weren't up. Many witnesses who gave their sworn testimony, who were even on Michael Brown's side, said his hands were not up. And to say, well, hands up, don't shoot, you look extremely ignorant. And let's move forward. Let's deal with the real issue. And the real issue is blacks killing blacks. And we can't allow that to happen. This is my plea to everyone. We can't let the race baiters like Al Sharpton, we can't let the race baiters like Jesse Jackson dictate what we do as African Americans. But we need to deal with the real issue. And the real issue is blacks killing blacks. And Al Sharpton, you seem to not be able to deal with that issue. So here's the thing. I'm going to deal with it. And I'm going to urge every single African American across this entire country to look at the real issue. And that real issue is blacks killing blacks. We need to solve this issue, and we need to solve it real quick, as fast as possible. And Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, they're in this business to make money. I'm in this business for progress, for solutions. And that is why I'm urging you to deal with the larger issue. And that is blacks killing blacks. And I urge everyone to realize that. That is the problem. And until we learn to have respect for ourselves, we are going to have respect from the police, from whites, from Hispanics. When are we going to have respect? We don't respect our own lives. How are they going to respect us? Think about that. Thank y'all.
What the hell would they do?
He's an angel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
May I address that, please?
Oh, greetings.
He's being paid. He's a year-old little black boy. Hey,
hello,
is he
hello,
black?
Hello,
he doesn't
hello.
Sound like he's black.
Hello. Listen,
yes,
y'all. We're getting a lot of
May
feedback.
May I address the issue?
Just a second. This is Scotty. I'm the engineer of the program, and we're getting a lot of feedback. Does someone have us on speakerphone?
Yeah, I'm hearing
it. Whoever is on 323, your area code is 323. That is where the echo was coming from. If you could call back in.
Okay, let me call back. Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Scotty.
You're welcome.
Yeah, when I heard that little video, I said, oh, my God, because first I heard about the whole clock deal, the young boy Ahmed that made the clock that happened right here in Texas, McAllen, Texas, I believe. And Mother Dunning mentioned the whole story and everything. That was one of her hot news topics. So I listened to the video, and then I found this other video by him. And I said, oh, my God, if this is what we have to look forward to, part of it. I mean, I know all of our young black children don't think like that. Hey, Delta, let me open up Delta's line. Hey, Delta, did you hear the video from the young man? Did you hear the video from the young man, the black young man about the clock? Speaking about President Obama, we just played that video.
He wasn't black. That was an African American.
That's the one I told you about. That's the one. Remember the other night I told you about the young man?
Yes.
And I told you he sounded like he was.
You said what now?
I said that's the one I was telling you about. To me, he sounded like a fool. I may not agree with everything the president say or do, but some things you just don't say.
Well, I don't like what he was saying about the Black Lives Matter and all of that stuff, and people were saying that Mike Brown's hands, well, it don't matter if his hands were up or down. The man still should not have been shooting at a young boy, two young boys walking down the street coming from the store.
And should not have had his body out there on the street for 4.5 hours.
Right. Right, so all of that was foolery. And even though, I mean, that whole, I mean, I can just shoot that whole argument down. But regardless of what anybody said, whether they were paid or not, and we know a lot of these people were forced into making those false statements because those people in Ferguson were having to pay these exorbitant fines and fees. So if you in jail for 3 weeks waiting on a court date and somebody tell you, no, you change your story and you say you didn't see his hands up, you know some of these people will. And that's what we're talking about. These sellouts, they're always going to be those type of people. And it sounds like, unfortunately, this little boy is going to be one of those ones that we're going to have to contend with as he grows up. Because he's actually a Ted Cruz supporter. Now, Ted Cruz is a crazy senator here in Texas. Crazy as a June bug. And this little black boy has this little group. It's like Teenagers for Ted or something like that.
Wow.
So I just found that quite interesting. We not only have some of these old heads, but we have some of these young black folks growing up. He sounds like he just really is totally against black people. And ironically, his parents are Democrats, but he's a conservative. He says he's a conservative. He is on the side of the police. He said he was on the side of the police in the Mike Brown shootings in New York. And so, hey.
And if you go look, I don't mean to cut you off, but if you go look, he got him a bleach blonde right out of the bottle sitting right beside him. And then they tries to be in that clique with the with them bleach blondes right out of a bottle. And when you go and look, he got him one of them sitting on his side. And that's, they think when they got one of those on their own and by their side, they think they got them something. And they'll say and do whatever they need to do in order to keep that. So if you go look, I guarantee you, he got him a white woman somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Because he doesn't like himself. He doesn't like himself.
That's really sad, too.
It's sad. It's such a young age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then also, too, you don't fool yourself. Even though his parents may be Democrat, a lot of us take on what our families believe.
His uncle is former military, and so when Barack Obama was running for president, he actually campaigned for John McCain. He said John McCain's story was inspiring to him. John McCain gave up everybody. I don't even see why they say this man is a war hero. He gave up. I mean, he flipped. So I don't even understand how this man is considered a hero. I mean, I thought what he did was treason. I thought that was what you call treason. But we have Brother Henry Brown. You're back with us. And let me also welcome in Mother Hattie, and she'll read our Women's United statement when we come back from break. Hey, Mother Hattie, how are you?
Hey there, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome in.
Hey.
Welcome in.
Hi.
Yes, so Brother Henry, you said you would like to
respond. I'm here too.
Yes, and Aja. Hello, Aja. How are you?
Hey, Aja.
Hi. So, Brother Henry, you said you would like to respond to what the young man spoke about in his video, CJ.
Well, I thought I did. I thought he was white, but he's black, so it's no reason to respond to a foolish little boy. Because, first of all, black, only lives that do matter is black lives. Why I say that? Racial Integrity Act of 1866 in the state of Virginia enacted, it says 30-second one-drop rule makes you black. So according to their law and what they go by, it's either you black or you white. There is no such thing as Mexican. Because Mexican means mixed man. In order to be a Mexican, you have to be black. A lot of people don't even know that. The Mexicans that we see are called Spaniards. Those are people who have Spain descent. Those are white Mexicans. I've been everywhere in Mexico, from Durango to Ixtapa to Agua Azul, to you name it. Mm-hmm. If the dark Wesley Snipes, he would be considered a Mexican.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I have a friend who's dark skinned, and his grandfather was Mexican.
My cousins are Mexican. My cousins are Mexican, but to the naked eye, they're black.
Y'all do know Mexican is not a racial classification. That's a nationality.
Yeah, I know that, but what I was saying, the word Mexican means mixed man. In order to be a Mexican, you have to be Olmec, which is black. You have to be Spaniard, which is European from Spain. And you have to be Asian, which from the Cambodian that came across the Bering Strait. It will be called Native American. They're not Native American. Native Americans are Olmec. The first people on this planet were Twa. They populated the whole planet first. They went everywhere first. They gave religion, everything you think of, the Twa, what people call pygmies, were everywhere first. Their god are a Twa god in Mexico. Nationality is a white man's thing. That's called division.
Yeah.
That's Europeans. That's not African. Even though Africans have tribes, we didn't classify. Race is a modern term. There was no race in ancient times. The stuff that we speak now, it's not even a language. It's a dialect. In order to have a language, you had to have a script, a culture, and a land.
Right.
Where the Spanish, Portuguese, Latin, all these different languages, English is using the same script, so it's not a language. What I want to say about the guy's video is white on white crime is way worse. In the state of Oregon, it's mostly white people killing each other. White people have wars. It's not one black person drop nuclear bombs on each other. Vlad the Impaler used to eat Europeans. If you read about the oppressions that they had during the Dark Ages, they was killing each other. Queen Elizabeth was taken. Virgin white women is smearing their blood on her face, thinking it would give the blood plasma would give her youth. This is why when the Moors had a 700 to 800 year per limit, the Moors from the Moroccan Empire had a 700 to 800 year per limit where they brought love letters, taught them Latin, gave them language, gave them science, cosmopolitan cities. By default, no disrespect to any Moors, but by trying to civilize the beast, you gave them our science to oppress us. Shamu is a killer whale in San Diego. He's a killer whale. These trainers train him day in and day out to do tricks for the audience to entertain. Is that correct? So if they do that, we saw on the news a couple years back, Shamu was attacking one of the trainers, and people couldn't figure out. His nature, his nature, he's a killer whale. Why am I saying this? White people, you have to judge people by their history. They wiped out every Tasmanian. They greeted out the Aboriginals. They went to North Africa and took the North Africans to India and enslaved them. They enslaved the Chinese. They did all these monstrosities to human life. Human, right? H-U-E, man? They did this to humans. So why in 2015 we think the beast is going to change? Even their own scientists here at USC in Los Angeles, California, is a white Jewish dude. He even says themselves that they have a different ancestry than Africans. The oldest and modern human come out of I think the Congo or South Africa, beginning of the Nile, Dr. Ben. The white people have a total different ancestry. This is where I kind of am leaning more towards the Dr. Yacoub story of Nation of Islam, that they was grafted or created. Because for the homosexuals, they had released a couple months ago, I think it was July, they have facilities for the homosexuals where they can develop embryos, babies, to give to homosexuals. Now, anybody in their right mind knows that the military is anywhere at least 75 to 100 years ahead of normal population. Who knows how long they've been creating these embryos? Because in international waters, there is no law.
Mm-hmm.
you do anything you want in international waters. It's nobody to do anything about it. These people, according to their DNA, they have RH, which is rhesus monkey. He's according to white scientists and Asian scientists or Japanese scientists. So the boy, he's misinformed. And then a lot of people, like one of the brothers or somebody said on here, if you grow up speaking a certain way, you're going to believe it and you're going to lean towards, you know, what you was taught. I think the African proverb engraved into the youth is something in stone. So when they get older, they lean towards whatever they was taught when they was little. The problem with that is I was always taught that heat rises. Well, if you go to the mountaintops, it's cold. This is when you get to Dr. Blair's study of research where it's a hollow earth. Scientists have proven it's a hollow earth now. Now,
Gilbert
they say it's
Blair.
A sun.
Dr. Gilbert Blair.
Dr. Gilbert Blair, the hollow earth. People said it was a hoax, it was a theory. Well, scientists has proven now that the earth is hollow. Now, they say, now they're saying it's a sun within the earth. Because astronauts go into space, they're on record saying that it's cold in space. How can it be so if you're closer to the sun?
Interesting.
It's a lot of scientific stuff that we have to really relook at and analyze. They're saying we're in a water drought. Over there at the 24-hour fitness, LA fitness, you go to the gym, sometimes they cut the water off. You can't wash your hands. They say the water's off because of the water drought. They're conserving water. We have technology to convert any type of water into drinking water. We live next to an ocean. If that's not good enough, we have water trucks that fight wildfires. We take those water trucks and supply the water here. We can run pipes from other states. So everything has to be rethink. Because most information that we hear is from the Europeans. The European, Dr. Phil Valentine explains in one of his videos that the Roman Empire, right, Vatican, screens everything for the Western world. And then it goes out for processing and then published or whatever the case may be. So if anything was an imminent threat to the white dominant society power structure, it would be eliminated. Thus, Jeff Fort of the Almighty Black Keystone Nation, Brown, Matulu Shakur, I believe, they should be releasing him soon, I think, or he already is.
But no, he's still a political prisoner. He hasn't been released.
Yeah, any political prisoner that can galvanize the people, revolutionize people to liberate ourselves is a threat, and they take them out. If you look up March 17th, 1978, it is called the National Security Council Memorandum 46. Anything that is linking black people and the black movement, the black power movement with Africa, anything that's uplifting black people, liberating black people, is deemed domestic terrorism. Jeff Fort is the first citizen in America to get convicted as a domestic terrorist. He's out of prison now. Gaddafi gave him $2 million to wage war in America, in Chicago, South Side. And then
Gaddafi
here in California,
gave
$2
million?
$2 million.
Gaddafi gave $2 million?
Jeff Fort. The Black Keystones. Almighty Black Keystones or L. Rukins in Chicago. And then here in California, we have a gang called the A-Trey Crips or A-Trey Hoovers, which is my neighborhood where I'm not from, but where I used to live. They shot up a courthouse. They shot down helicopters. The monster Cody Scott became like a black power, the black power movement. They stopped that. They pay shot callers off. Anytime a young cat wants to get into black power, a lot of times I tend to get killed.
Wow.
A lot of these gang members are Masons, Shriners. They may not be under Prince Hall, but they in some form of Masonry. And what happens is they get kickbacks.
We have so many sellouts against us.
And that's why, me personally, I'm not an integrationist, because our house is not even together. We're divided.
Right.
What I'm saying is this.
Yeah.
You have the Moors. You got Moors that follow the Prophet Nobuju Ali. You got Moors that follow Tai Street Bay. You got Moors that do whatever they want. They claim to be Moors. You got people who are RDG, right? How can you be RDG and not be a pan-Africanist? Marcus Garvey was pan-African. He said himself, he went to every continent that he could. He went to every country he could, and he saw the plight of the black people was the same at every spot he went to. This is why he developed the United Negro Improvement Association. He said it himself. So how can you be RBG and not be a pan-Africanist?
Do you come across people that say that they're RBG, but they're not pan-Africanist?
Yes, I come across them all the time. They'll say the F word to Mexicans. They'll say F Puerto Ricans. Now, keep in mind, every continent has indigenous people in it. So what I'm saying is this. Each nation, like Puerto Rico, they have indigenous Africans. So are you saying, I'm talking about the RBG cats, are they saying screw the dark-skinned people or screw the white ones? Because I know nobody knows for certain where white people come from. They say they come out of Africans. Well, white people say they don't come from out of Africa. They say it themselves.
Yeah. Right.
Until we get united, how can we unite with anyone else? Where was they during the 1200 Arab slave trade or the 600 to current right now? I don't see Mexicans in Los Angeles marching with black people beating down the police for black rights. I don't see that. This is why
let me say this real quick before we go on the break. Something that, you know, I hear a lot of people talk about is black unity. How can we have, and I want to pick this up on when we come back from break, how can we have black unity when we have this indecisiveness about what to call ourselves, Africans, black, Negroes, African-Americans, RBG versus Moors and this and that, Christians, Christians, people want to call themselves Christians, people don't want to call themselves Muslims, whatever. How can we work on everybody just coming together with ideas or following the blueprints already laid out for us and moving forward? Because that's my main problem that I always see with us as black people, arguing about this fact or that fact. And it's so much to our history, for one thing. It's just so much. It's just not like we're just this monolithic group of people. There are different cultures, yes, different people from different parts of the world. So how do we pull all of that together and work together and not keep going around in a circle with these differences? Let's take a quick break. And then, Mother Hattie, if you could read the statement so we won't miss that tonight when we come back. And then we'll pick right back up on that unity. All right.
Sure.
Great.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
Okay, and we are back, and Henry, you are here with us tonight, and you get a chance to hear our statement
referencing the attacks against women, and I know you stand for the sisters just like you stand for the brothers. So, Mother Hattie, you want to read the statement?
Sure. Yes, I can do that. This is a working statement from Women United regarding the attacks on Black women, such as Rekia Boyd, Ayanna Stanley-Jones, Sandra Bland, and many others. Women United denounce and detest the vicious attacks on Black women we have been historically plagued with and seems to have escalated in more recent times. We are 100% human beings and deserve to be protected and with equal justice under the law and other entities. The recent vicious behavior and disrespect of the lives of Black women must stop. These are unconscionable, deplorable acts and actions occurring in a country that considers itself to be civil and democratic. A plan of action must be adopted and implemented immediately to stop the terror on Black women. Women United is placing a call to action for all women groups, organizations, and men to rectify these crimes against the humanity of Black women. To make your statement and act to protect the humanity of our sisters, contact Women United at women.united7777@gmail.com.
Thank you so very much, Mother Hattie. And that is the statement of Women United against the attacks on Black women, African women, all around the world, particularly here, where we have Sandra Bland and four other sisters. They were all found dead in a jail cell. Again, one was okay, somebody's moving around, making a lot of noise. Thank you. And so those women, including, as she stated, Rekia Boyd, little Ayanna Stanley-Jones, little 8 years, I think she was 8 years of age when the police officers in Detroit just burst through their door in the middle of the morning, I believe it was, looking for, I think, the baby's father. I believe they were looking for her father. And just came in, threw the grenade in, and shot the baby in the head while she was sleeping there with her grandmother. And so this police officer, he goes free, of course. And it was just so sad watching that grandmother pleading to the detective, to the cop, to tell the truth. I mean, he just continued to lie. So all of these attacks against our sisters, we stand against that, and we hope that more women join us. We haven't heard anything from, what's that group, they're supposed to be primary women's group. They've said nothing. Now I think it is. What is it, Mother Hattie? What's that women's group? Do you know what I'm speaking of?
Women's Against Drunk Drivers?
No, not them, but them too. I mean, they could stand and unite with us. National Organization of Women. Yes, thank you. Yes, National Organization of Women. Now, I haven't heard them say anything. They have not reached out to Women United to unite with us. Nothing, no kind of campaigns to unite with us to try to help the brothers, the sisters that have been attacked. So this is one of our campaigns. This is our mission. This is a statement that Women United has put out, and we want more women and brothers to join in with us on this. And let's come up with a plan to protect our sisters. All right. I have a little bit of news. I read this article about Howard University students. Howard University students are protesting via Twitter. They're protesting about the rats running around the campus. They're protesting the Wi-Fi is very seldom up and running, and a lot of the students are saying, how is it that they can complete their work when they have online classes or need to do some work online and their Wi-Fi isn't up? And you would think that Howard University, I think we spoke about Cosby and him with his charitable donations tonight. Bill Cosby has donated millions to Howard. And I know a few years ago, Howard started laying off a lot of their professors and staff, and Howard was going through a lot of financial strife. So the students are now suffering because of all of that. And I just could not even imagine if I was paying all of that money to go to Howard, and when I need to use the Wi-Fi, I can't use it. That's crazy. They need to do something about that. And then TSU right here in Houston, Texas, there was a promotional video made to, you know, increase enrollment, encourage students to come to TSU. But what they want to do is diversify this historically black college. And so all of the actors in the promotional video were white. Now, what the hell is going on when a historically black college uses white people to promote the college? I just don't get that. I'm just so sick of black folks selling out. I just do not know what to do. I just cannot take it.
Who controls the money?
Well, you know what?
What I'm saying is all these HBCUs that many people look up to, where do they get their finances from? What bank?
Well, they've always, in fact, a lot of the HBCUs were started by white people for their children, their mulatto or mixed children, slave children. They sent them to those schools. So they've always been funded by white people. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, how long do we keep playing the game? If it's a historical black college, then let it be a historical black college.
It says in the
And black people step up and donate. If you're an alumni, then give back to that school to keep it running and have some type of action. Be on the board or force the board to do what they need to do for the students.
Any of those holy books, it says give back to Caesar what is Caesar. That's the problem. We keep playing in the system and we complaining about it. That's just why I said Marcus Garvey's plan was right and exact, separate and create your own. In the state of Florida, it is illegal to live off the grid. State of Texas is on the board and so is the state of California. They in court as we speak to fight their cases to not be considered illegal to live off the grid. They have raided a city outside of Dallas and they raided a city outside of California City for living off the grid. The system do not want you to separate. Money is energy. It's manpower. It's man hours. The truly rich and wealthy, they don't work. They send their valet to do whatever they need to be done. They just point their finger and that's it. I've been to Hollywood. I've seen how these white Jewish record execs do. They don't do nothing. Everybody else on the bottom does everything. Slaves. We must separate. This is, I will say this. Everybody should fight their, the way, you know how to fight. Legally, go to the World Court, Article 3, genocide, argue that. We need a military to protect the people. Every person who went to fight for our rights, they ended up becoming exiled or murdered. I mean, Malcolm X went over to trying to get fight for our reparations. Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad and Johnny Cochran. The only person I know for certain right now is Dr. Carl Anderson is trying to do that right now with the World Court. But he needs somebody to protect him.
He's not the only one that's doing that.
Under the Second Amendment of the Constitution, we have a legal right to have a militia.
Hold on a second. Scotty, you were saying something. I thought also there was someone else.
He's not the only
one that you had on the show.
Yeah, he's not the only one. I've been working with political prisoner advocates and their families for going on 3 years now. I only came into the knowledge of political prisoners about 3 years ago, and ever since I've been working. And we have many people that is going to the United Nations, just left the United Nations, matter of fact, at the peer review. At the United Nations peer review in relation to CERD, the Conference for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, Attorney Afia Wangaza lives down there in Columbia, South Carolina. She goes there. I got brain freeze. I've heard you mention him on the program before. Dr. Ansari. Dr. Ansari.
I have a question.
Yeah,
Dr. Ansari.
Do they have a legal case Like, are there cases?
Yes, they are like presenting. They are presenting cases.
With a team of lawyers.
Yes, they are.
Because what I'm saying is, Clark Anderson is the only one that I know of that have 7 Jewish lawyers.
No, they're using black people. These are black people that are attorneys themselves, and no, they ain't using white people to argue for them in court. Not that. Well, it's a lot of complicated issues here. This isn't my program. I'm just the engineer of the program. But let me say this about the question that was asked about black unity. Look, I ain't trying to unify with everybody. That's impossible. Africans ain't even on the continent are not even unified. In South Africa, you got the Zulus who down there setting people on fire that's from the Sudan or from Ethiopia and calling them immigrants. Black unity is impossible. I'm only trying to get with people of like mind who have the same goals and the same values and the same principles, and everybody else, you know, y'all go do what y'all gonna do. All right. In every revolution that has occurred throughout the world, only 5% of the people participated in the revolution. The masses did not participate. All right. And so.
Let me ask you a question. In Ghana, when they had the Ghana revolution, did they not go to every single house and put a knife to everybody's neck to make them join the revolution?
I don't know.
Did Henry Cousin, didn't
so is that what you're telling me, that all these people, let's just use the county I live in, I should go over to the next town, all right? Because, see, I live in family. We've been on this land for a month, since it was first settled by Africans, all right? Not Olmecs, not whatever, people coming across the Bering Strait. No, Africans, all right? So, anyway.
Well, Africa, that's just another name.
Well, okay, all right, well, yeah. But if should I go over to the next town over and say, look, y'all fools over here don't realize slavery was never abolished because the 13th Amendment says that it's left in place for punishment for crime. So y'all fools sitting up here believing that slavery was abolished in 1865, and you ain't even read the 13th Amendment to know that you calling something mass incarceration when it's really a continuation of slavery. So unless you believe what I believe, you know what? I'm gonna cut your damn head off. Come on, bro. You know what I'm saying?
You're right. I'm wrong.
Malcolm X said, first of all, Malcolm X said, and that's who my master teacher is. I studied teachings of Malcolm X and the brothers in the Black Panther Party. Those are my role models right there. But like Malcolm X said, though, don't be so quick to judge somebody because they don't know what you know, because you didn't always know what you know now.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Oh, I get so tired of people who study, and then they harp on people who don't know what they know. But then 5 years ago, you didn't know that.
Everybody's
in its own time. But what I want to make a comment about the question that Black Rose put out about unity, to piggyback on to Scotty. Another thing I wanted to throw into the fire that is would cause some sort of halt in Black unity is the onset or the rush of a lot of our Black men, not all of them, I'm just saying a lot, have rushed over to the other side to marry white women. And so they are not going to be so quick to join this whole unified for the Black, you know, because they're going to be listening to the white woman, and they're going to be listening to their half-white children, and then the ones that I have talked to, they're so undecided now because they've married into the white woman and their white family, so they're not for the Black power thing. So a lot of them are lost. So
what about the millionaires? What about the millionaires? Do you think that a multimillionaire wants to see this system end? See, cause I'm a revolutionary. I want to dissolve this corporation known as USA Inc. Because, see, this ain't a country, it ain't a nation. It ceased being a nation in the 1800s when they incorporated as a corporation. And so I want to see this corporation dissolved. I want to see it replaced. I want to build something better. And so, but until pending revolution, until the people come to the consciousness to where we ready for some real revolution, then I just do what I can to bring relief to whoever. Cause to be honest with you, I could just sit up here where I live in the country, you know, on the land that my Cherokee ancestors and African ancestors passed down, and we and our family been living on it for hundreds of years, probably centuries. I could sit up here cause I don't live in a city and I don't live in a town. I live in a country on acres of land. And I could sit up here and just grow food and just go fishing and not be worried about all these people out here getting shot down in the streets, not be worried about people getting enslaved in prison. Cause I could just stay up here and stay to myself and not be worried about any of it. But God, the Creator didn't put that in me. He gave me empathy that I care about other people who are in worse situations than I am. Okay, so, but again, I'm not trying to unify with everybody because everybody ain't on the same page, let alone on the same level. All right. And I'm trying to unify as many people as possible through this radio network. All right. That I built, to give black people an alternative in a black safe space to come and speak about whatever it is they want to speak about without the white man pulling the plug on them. And so I just do what I can. I'm trying to unify with people of like mind. They may not be on my level. I try to have patience with them though. Okay. Because like I said, 3 years ago, I didn't even realize it was political prisoners. 5 years ago, I didn't even know slavery was never abolished. So I try to be patient with people, and I'm willing to work with anybody, but I know that 100% unification, it ain't never happened. At any time in a point of any history, it ain't never happened. So I'm just trying to unify with as many people with like mind that is working towards black liberation, African liberation, whatever label you want to put on it. That's all I'm trying to do. But I just think that black unity is a pipe dream. All right. Unify with people that you can build with, because you're not going to be able to unify with everybody.
Can I jump in there for a minute?
Brother Brown.
Yes, you sure can, Brother Brown. Let me just thank our guest because he has to leave now, but I just want to thank him and just let him share his last comments. You still there, Henry? Okay, yeah, he did drop off. He said he had to step off. So, yes, Brother Brown, how are you? Welcome in.
Yeah, I heard some pieces. You know, some people misidentify words. Some people misidentify our struggle. I hear this kind of loud and clear. What we have to understand is that this is not everybody's intuitive position to be liberated. You can only liberate people who want to be liberated. So you can't drag people out of church and tell them, you know what, Christianity is wrong. You know why? Because they want to believe it's real. You can't stop people from telling their children that Santa Claus is coming out of church. Okay? But for those who want to understand truth based on knowledge and wisdom, like Scotty said earlier, you deal with people like that. You cannot deal with people who are amalgamationists. And what I mean by that, people who want to be amalgamated with Europeans, Asians, or anything but themselves, you can't deal with them because they will turn on you. I don't care how much knowledge they got. I don't care. You take people like Cornel West, Tavis Brown, you know, people like that. These are Negro intellectuals. They jump in battles that primarily don't include us as if we are included. And the bottom line is that when elements that are out there needed to unify ourselves around a certain cause, you don't see them. You know, there's very few people that will say, I will lay down everything that I have for the struggles. And I hear people give mixed reviews about Chancellor Williams and John Henry Clark. Some people say that, you know, he was going with a white woman, or blah, blah, blah. But my question when people ask me stuff like that, what is your contribution? How have you contributed to this cause? As I said, I was telling somebody earlier last week on my last program, you know, and the young man continued to make the assertion that we're not doing anything. You know, we're not doing this. We're not doing this. Okay, whenever you put we in a situation, take the we out and put I in there. What am I doing? See, I do not need the NAACP, which I call Nigger H Alligator Schools Apostles. I don't need to be a part of that to get something done. If I know what my role is in the struggle is, if I have been given wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of how to make things move, and how to do things to get positive results, how to use the spiritual elements of my ancestors, then I have to move on that. We often sit around, and I've been in this thing for many years, going all the way back to when I was 16 years old. We often sit around and try to figure out what to do instead of getting up and doing something. You know, and it's just like I learned the cliche years ago about whose job is. And it was always passed around as if it was somebody else's job because nobody really wanted to do it. And that's the way it is when you come to black unity. See, we will never have, like Brother Scott said, there will never be a total unification in the struggle. Because you got too many persons of disenfranchised. You know, I don't have time to hate the preachers for what they do. I can talk about them and let people know the truth, but I got to move on. Because if I spend 100% of my energy talking about people that have not reached the plateau of consciousness, after the information has been imparted to them, they guess what? I'm worse than they are. And there's a lot of them out there. These are handpicked, mentally deficient leaders. I call them mentally deficient because anytime you do not want to know anything about who you are, as opposed to being told who you were, then you have a mental problem. See, I don't want any white man, you know, and I deal with Europeans and Anglo-Saxons every day of the week. I deal with them. But they always know that there's something about me that they cannot use me. And when they come, they got to come right. Because I'm not here to play games with any of them. And once they know that, you know, whether they know I'm a revolutionary, whether they know not, I don't always go towards them with a smiling face. Because I don't see a damn thing funny about this. This is serious business to me. My people are suffering. And when it comes down to, knowledge and consciousness, Sister Asia made a very, very profound statement. You know, I can't expect somebody to read every book that I have read over the last point of view. Okay, I can't expect people to have the same knowledge that I have. Because your interpretation may be flawed because of what you read. You may not have studied what you read. See, people just can't pick up a book and read it. When it comes to some of the things that our scholars have written. And I deal with some work, I'm doing some work right now with some guys that's incarcerated. And I introduced them to the concept of Maya. That these are brothers that have been studying Islam. These are brothers that have been studying everything else. But through another brother that I woke up, he was able to wake up the minds of 50 people that's incarcerated. And that's how we have to deal. We have to deal by asking our ancestors to intervene on behalf of us. We cannot do anything without our ancestors. And if we don't understand the significance of libation, they have to pull out of prayers and Jesus and making salats and all that. Understand what was given to us before any of that took place. Before there was a Muhammad, before there was a Buddha, before there was a Hare Krishna, whoever the hell you want to believe in, there was Africa. And if my descendants that put this blood in my body, regardless of my skin color or the texture of my hair, through the miscegenation, if my ancestors put this blood in me, that there's a purpose for it. There's a spiritual purpose for me having African blood running through my veins. And that purpose is to understand who I am and to help liberate my people based upon the knowledge and wisdom that have been imparted to me. That's when you have unity. It don't mean, like I told somebody the other day, we're not going to give 25,000 people to follow us, and I'm not looking for that. That happened early in my life when I struggled 20-some years ago, and I was out there, and I thought, you know, that my wisdom and my knowledge, but so God told me, so man, you know, you can't be a lone wolf and you can't do this. Well, you know what? I found out through a process of elimination that as a lone wolf, I got more accomplished than following a lot of people who want to do a lot of damn arguing. See, I don't argue. I let people who don't have intelligence argue. People who I can who understand me and I understand them, they're the people that I communicate with. I'm definitely not going to argue with a fool. See, but unity, black unity, for the liberation of our people begins with self. See, and that's something that I learned dealing with Dr. Francis West Wilson when I met her over the phone years ago. And I was telling her about my endeavors and some people telling me that I didn't need to start my organization. We got too many organizations. Getting an organization is already established. But guess what? Where I live at, there are no organizations. And black people up there
can't the need.
Right. That's right. And
hey, Brother Brown, hold on. Let's take a quick break. And then we'll come right back after the break.
Okay.
They just hope that he'll never wake up because they never want to meet him on the back.
What is your opinion?
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For live programming schedules, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Okay, and we are back. And Brother Brown, you were speaking about your organization.
Yeah. You know, I'm sorry I joined late because I had to go to Baltimore today and I had to take care of some family business and I was traveling. And I just got back about 5 minutes at 11. And that's when I just called in at 11 o'clock.
And, well, we're glad that you can join us.
Yeah. And you know, I deal, when I first met you, Sister Black Rose, I started dealing with you. I came to Mother Dunn's house and I did some work for her. I met you in the airport. You understand me? And you know, I didn't ask for no entourage. I didn't need all of that. I met your mother through the phone. We have never, you know, seen each other, but I'm just saying, people, you deal with people like that. And in reference to that young brother talking about somebody got some Jewish lawyers, we'll tell them like straight off the top, leave them damn Jews alone. Okay?
I agree with that, Brother Brown.
They will cross you in a heartbeat.
They don't love us that much.
No, they never love you and they enslave you. How the hell are you going to tell me? I'm sorry for my language. But when people do not understand the nature of these people who call themselves Jews, because in my opinion, after studying, there is no such thing as a Jew. Okay, number one, we need to understand that. So people talking about whether Jesus was a Jew. No, Jesus was not a Jew. If you study and get somebody to teach us these things, and don't go back on what your technology that the Europeans used on you, then you will come out of your dilemma. But they are the trickiest people on this planet. I've dealt with them. I've dealt with Jewish lawyers. I've dealt with Caucasian lawyers. And that's why I went to school my damn self, see. Because now I'm not totally a lawyer. I haven't passed the bar. But I've been able to represent people at different levels in federal court. And I've learned a lot. And the main thing I have learned in that is that how to read and understand the law. And that's the most important part. Because when you learn how to read it and understand and decipher it, you might not can cross every T and dot every I, but you can do something with 25 or 26 alphabet.
Well, you know, Rick Ross. I was watching the documentary on him on Netflix earlier today, and that's what he did. He said he was illiterate. Now, he was one of the biggest drug dealers in South Central LA, right?
Right.
And he said he was illiterate until he was 28 years of age.
Okay.
Wow. And he actually, when he was young, he played tennis. He was able to play tennis, you know, hit a few balls, rather, with Arthur Ashe. Him and some other black guys, in the neighborhood, right over there where Venus and Serena were playing, learning to play tennis. All of them, well, not all of them, there were a few other black brothers in the neighborhood. They were playing tennis, and they were really, really good. Rick Ross, he was so good playing tennis, and so he had the opportunity to hit a few balls with Arthur Ashe. But what happened? Some kind of way he was ineligible because he couldn't fill out his college application to attend school so that he could continue playing tennis. I believe that's how it was. Some kind of way, whatever it was, he couldn't read the application. So, he couldn't further his education, but he, became literate in jail. And he said while he was in jail, he read everything. And he studied the law, and that's how he was able. See, Brother Brown said, they got him because what they did they got him on a three strikes law. But through his reading and studying in jail, he learned that, see, he was in L.A. and then he moved from L.A. and went to Ohio, but he was still doing the same thing, drug trafficking, right? But what they did was they tried to, well, they locked him up on the three strikes laws like it was three different crimes that he committed when actually it was a term for it, it was like continual conspiracy or something like that, continual criminal activity, something like that, which meant that they locked him up
illegally, really.
Habitual criminal is what they call them. Habitual criminal.
What? Habitual criminal.
Yeah.
So that's how he was able to get out the first time. Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
Very interesting. Yes. If you have Netflix, check that out. It's called Freeway Crack in the System. And it's actually showing the raw footage, the real footage of when the FBI and CIA had to come out and announce that, yes, they did put the drugs and the crack in the community, and they linked up with different people to put it all in the community. And even one of, like, Rick Ross's companions actually spoke out about what the CIA was doing and how they were involved and how they were trying to charge them and all that. It is really good. I advise people to check that video out. And go on YouTube and check out some of these videos with some of these former so-called big-time drug kingpins. And just, I mean, if you just look at it and you see how the system works and how it just set people up. I mean, it's like these brothers were making... the other one I was watching today, Nicky Barnes in Harlem,
right,
back in the '70s. They were making $72 million a year. They were making like 10 and 15. Really?
I was in New York in 1974. That's when Nicky Barnes got busted.
And that's when all that hair on was big. I mean, they were making $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a day.
They were making that kind of money back when Nicky
Barnes. Back then in the '70s.
Right. When Nicky Barnes got busted, you know, he got busted with another guy that they never found. His name was Frank Matthews.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go on the internet and Google Frank Matthews. He was one of Nicky Barnes' lieutenants. He was in there with Nicky Barnes. Now when they got too old, back in the '70s, right, Nicky Barnes had $100,000 in a suitcase. And when he got busted for a traffic violation, this rookie cop told him, you know, he warned him. He said, look, take this suitcase. You didn't see me. I didn't see you. And the guy, by him being naive, he took Nicky Barnes in his suitcase there. And he was living next to he had just put $100,000 addition on his house. He was living out in, I don't know what, he was living in Long Island. But he was living next to the magistrate of the U.S. District Court of New York.
Oh.
And he put Nicky Barnes.
Oh, okay.
And that's how they turned him off. The man thought he was working on Wall Street. The man didn't even know he was a drug dealer. He had a Rolls Royce, a couple of Cadillacs, you know, wife and kids went to private school, wife just heard eloquently, he dressed nice in the suit. Came with the work with a briefcase every day. And nobody knew he sold dope.
Hmm.
And, you know, like I said, you know, that game, it's another guy, if you Google, his name was Pee Wee Kirkland. Now, Pee Wee Kirkland, he was selling dope at the same time Nicky Barnes was. He played basketball for Norfolk State University in Norfolk, Virginia. And I watched it because I was a kid. And I have a terrible goal. And Pee Wee used to drive Rolls Royces to school. And, you know, the teachers, they had a meeting that said, and told him, said, you know, we don't want you to drive your Rolls Royce on the campus anymore. You know, and when he would play ball, all these gangsters just come down from New York or Baltimore, and come to the game. And I mean, they had mink coats on, they had leather suits on, you know, alligator shoes. I'm talking about 1969 and 70. When he finished Norfolk State College with a degree in business, he had a no-cut contract with the Chicago Bulls. They offered him $36,000. He'll tell you on the YouTube site. He'll tell you that. They offered him $36,000. He flew from New York to Chicago. Made the team. And when he got ready to sign the contract, he told the man, he said, I don't need that money because I got that much money in my pocket right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's how much he was making. He was tied in with Nicky Bonds and Frank Matthews and them up in New York. And like I said, back then, tonight.
Oh, wait a minute. What was the guy's name? What did you say his name was? Because I just saw something with that. What's his name? Who did you just say, Brother Brown? Because there was another brother. He was supposed to be like one of the greatest basketball players out there in Harlem, which they had so many at those pickup games.
His name was Richard T. Wee Kirkland. That's where he came from, Harlem.
Okay,
he came from Harlem.
Another somebody. His name was different.
But he'll tell you.
He was
right
a
now,
legend.
He coaches a. Yeah, right now he coaches a high school, a Catholic high school team in New York. You know, but he's on YouTube. You type in, you go to YouTube and type in Richard T. Wee Kirkland. And he talks about this younger generation of young brothers out there that call themselves gangsters and thugs, you know. He got a lot of most motivational stuff that he do. But yeah, I watched him as a kid, man. I used to idolize the way them guys used to dress.
Mm-hmm.
But you understand me. But like I said, he came in off of state as a basketball player on a scholarship. Came right out of the streets of Harlem. And, you know, very flashy dresser. Little Eldorados, and he had about three or four different cars, Rolls Royce. And that's the way he carried it. And, you know, when the feds came at him, right after they bust him, all of them were together. They bust them all. And then it was alleged that Nicky Barnes turned state evidence.
Uh-huh.
You know, because nobody had seen his face for the last, 15, 20 years. Because they had a thing called a pizza connection that they busted the tag in New York. The pizza, P-I-Z-Z-A, the pizza connection. But they bust all these Italians in New York that were selling heroin and cocaine. And they put a hood on Nicky Barnes and brought him in the federal court to testify. Because he had a facelift and nobody knows what he looks like. He could be living next door to you. Yeah, but he helped to say his bust because one of the things that hurt him was that the people who he felt loyal to were not loyal to him. You know, he was not a dirty player in the game. And when he got to law, you know, they started trying to go with his wife and, you know, have sex with his daughters because his daughters had reached the age, you know, they were getting to be young adults. And nobody took care of his family for him like they said they were going to do. And people made promises that they didn't keep. And so in order for him to get out, he decided to never go all the way that he was going to ever get out of jail. Same thing about Rafer Edwards up there in D.C. When Alonzo Mourning was going to Georgetown. Rafer Edwards gave Alonzo Mourning a cottage drive. And Alonzo, he also came from that area that I came up in. John Thompson told him something to you. I'm gonna give you one piece of advice. So you get a car back, he gave him a BMW, you know. So you get a BMW back. And continue your education and you'll get to the pro. But if you keep the BMW, I'm going to ship your ass back and trust you, Virginia. You'll never play pro ball. See, and these drug dealers now, they become very, very lucrative to young, naive people. You know, it's something real, real big, you know, to hang around a dealer. They call him Baller, you know. I'm hanging with a baller, you know. He rolling, you know. But you only destroying your own people. See, I know the game because I've been in it. You never get rich off of nobody but who you are. See, you ain't gonna get rich putting dope at a white man neighborhood. Been there, done that. It don't work. The dope game will only allow you to get rich off, to step on who you are in order to make money. And when they get tired of it, they do you just like you do a roach. You may see this one roach running around your house all the time. Sooner or later, you're going to step on them. When you step on them, you're going to annihilate them. And that's how the drug game is. That's how I related to younger brothers. You're not going to get anywhere with that game but time. You know? And you're not, and I tell brothers, you know, you can't unify our people because you're not going to use the, you know, like Scottie said about millionaires and money. There are no millionaires in our struggle. It don't exist. The last millionaire in our struggle, people couldn't tell me who it was. It was Sam Cooke. And Sam Cooke had made a pact with Dr. King and Malcolm X that whatever they needed, because, you know, he bought himself a recording studio.
Wow.
Before his death. And he said that he had enough money that he could help finance anything that Dr. King and Malcolm X did out of his pocket. Okay, he made a pact with them. And soon after, Sam Cooke didn't know that the meetings that he was having with Dr. King and Malcolm X were being recorded by the FBI and the CIA. And when they set this woman up in that hotel to kill him, they did the same thing with the Manchurian candidate. She never remembered nothing. They ended up putting the woman in another hospital, and that's where she died, and she never came out. And right after they killed Sam Cooke, they killed Martin Luther King, and they killed Malcolm. So, when we talk about total unity, we're not going to have it. When we talk about a militia of people, who can you trust? Who can I trust with my life? You know, and I've been in a situation where I needed somebody to trust. But I say, you know, the only thing I can do is arm myself. Because I can trust me if I can't trust somebody else. I know I can trust myself.
You know you can trust yourself.
That's right. And after I learned about the spiritual power of my ancestors, now I know who I really can trust. I can trust the spiritual powers of my ancestors for my earthly protection. Because through the power of Vodun, which the European called voodoo, which is not voodoo, it's just us connecting with the energies of our ancestors who are passed on. That's all it is. All that, you know, when I tell people about this Hollywood thing, you have to look at Hollywood when it comes to us as a means of destruction. When it deals with white folks, it's a means of education. So you look at some of the things that they showed us in their movies, but all of them in it 10 years ago, and now you see the shit coming to fruition. But you look at what they showed us about us, and it's always negativity. One of them shows that I hate is this show called Blackish, which looks at Mormon. And, you know, I do not like to see the coonery that step on such role models that they portray us as on TV. You know, putting us in just to make money. Put us in these cool positions. Never showing anything positive.
I hear you.
You know, and our children look at this as if this was something great to be a damn right. fool. You know, and it's sad because we have all these little young kids coming up who know nothing about who they are. And that's why when I talked about the Africa Free School, Sister Shira, it's a necessity that we get this started as soon as I can get my hands on scratch. Because they get us some books to start working with these kids. Because right now, the economic system is going to flip the script on black people.
It sure is.
Our children is going to college, is getting these degrees, and coming out, flipping burgers, you understand, washing cars, working in the malls, and service-oriented jobs will not
paying
be
paying back
able.
Them loans.
Right. They will not, yeah, because they got to pay these loans back. And once you have to pay these loans back, you understand me, you're going to be stuck because that money got to be paid.
Yep.
And they're going to press
you.
You're
all left for yourself.
You don't have nothing left for yourself. Unless you're a doctor or somebody like that who make these agreements to go work in a low-income community. And either paying these two loans back when you have to dedicate so much of your time, the rest of the students ain't gonna have nowhere to work at. Mm-hmm. And they're pushing us into a service oriented industry.
Yes, and that is so very true.
Yeah, and we're servicing white folks. See, I could
Joe Biden
it.
Tried to tell us.
Yeah. And I could see. If I was in a job to do that I can bring back to my community as a progression of what Booker T. Washington and Martin Scott see, learn a trade, bring it back to your own community, rebuild your community. Mm-hmm. You take people like Magic Johnson, all these people, these millions and millions of dollars, they never gave a damn thing back. I look at that little shit that, excuse my language, I'm sorry. That little boy played LeBron James too. That shit, there's a tax write-off for him. What if you do get them kids some free books or something like that? Look at the $1 million endorsements you got to cover with his tax gates. So he can, they tell him, look, you go ahead and get us away. You know, you get this million away. Cause you made $30 million this year, $100 million. Or more. So you got to give something away, or look like you're giving something to. Right?
Yeah.
You got to
that kind of money. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to protect yourself.
But he is not giving anything for the progression to help our people in a prosperous way to come out of the dilemma that we're in economically.
Something that's going to keep coming back and keep going and keep giving and giving.
Right. Reciprocity, that's what we call it.
Right.
Reciprocating the financial, the economics of inner city black America. Let me tell you something.
But
another thing I looked at.
In defense of LeBron James, I can't say that. He has done a little bit more than what the rest of these people have done. He was one of the ones that came out on the Miami team, him and his other players. They came out in support of Trayvon, and they did the little hoodie picture and all of that, which is, I mean, it's really not anything. But they did make a statement. At least they did do that versus nobody else did anything. But Eric Gardner was choked to death. He did put on his little I Can't Breathe t-shirt. And then some people will argue that, given those, I think it's what, 6 scholarships a year that he gives or something like that. I mean, that is kind of like giving back. He is you know, at least sending some students to college. So, I mean, what do you say, you, Aja, or Brother Brown, or Delta, or Mother Hattie, what do y'all think about that? I mean, should we, like, say, okay, well, at least he's doing a little something, and maybe if he had the right advisors, he could do more. I think, too, sometimes these people, they need better advisors, and I think sometimes some of them, they're separated. They've been separated. When you look at these athletes, most of these athletes, some pro athletes, they've been separated from black people all their lives, pretty much. They've gone to white colleges. They've gone to probably some white high school because they were recruited from their hood over to some white preppy high school. So they've been ostracized from black people for a majority of their, half of their life, I would say, by the time they make it to pros. Hell, they haven't been around no black folks since, they was probably about 10 years old. You know, when they don't know the struggle.
That's what happened to Magic Johnson. Everybody was saying Magic Johnson, you know, Magic Johnson came from a little class family. His father and mother worked in Detroit. I think it was Detroit. No, that's in Michigan. They worked in the auto industry. They were union reps in the auto industry. They can make big money. Magic didn't come up even being in a camp. And when he got the scholarship, he didn't come up even being out of a can with a smoke.
No.
You know, that's not to say he had a silver spoon in his mouth. But when he came up, you know, he was hand-picked because of his athletic prowess to play basketball at Michigan State. Or Michigan, whichever one he went to. But, you know, then he went right there. He went to the pros. He played in one team. He hooked up with some people. Again, these guys, all of them that made money like that, they have Jewish agents. They lock in on these boys immediately when they come out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
They got these agents. LeBron had one. The boy's mama escalated while he was in high school. That's one of the reasons he didn't even go to college. They pulled his mama out of the project, put her in a crib, put his mama in an Escalade, put him in a car to drive to high school. As soon as he come out of high school, he walked right into the NBA. Because if he didn't go to college, LeBron James.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did. He went straight from high school to the pros.
Right. Kobe did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And I'm honest, I tell you, if I had a talent like that, I would do the same thing. I would do like Venus and Serena. I would go on to the pros, and while I'm playing my tennis and while I'm becoming a multimillionaire, I could still go to school, accomplish my side dreams and goals and all that. Hey, Brother Brown, we just have about 1 minute. You want to take us through libation and close us out?
Well, no problem. I appreciate y'all giving me that time.
Brother Brown, before you start, I just want, because I felt like I kind of lost my cool there for a second, and I just want to apologize to Black Rose and the people on the line.
Oh, no, you were cool, man, because sometimes, let me tell you, bro, I'm a little bit older than you. Sometimes you got to do that, and I'm going to tell you why.
I lose my cool all the time.
You learn to these young brothers that read one or two books, right?
Yeah.
And they hang around with these, I call them Jewish merchants of destruction. And they feed destruction, and you know, and they think they got locks on what the revolution is. And they don't know the revolution. See, one book, that guy was misinterpreting Chancellor Williams' book a week ago, he called in. You know, don't misinterpret the book. Understand the book. Don't just buy a book and read it one time and think you got it. Because I got books that I've been reading for the last 20 years over and over and over to get a better interpretation. But you were cool.
They say you should read a book from 7 times. Some books.
Right.
Read it 7 times.
At least 7 times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you were all right, man. I had no problem with it. And you know, when you got to do that. When you have to do that, bro, sometimes you got to pull them in.
Yep.
You got to pull them in. You got to pull them in. Yep. If not, they get twisted. But I'm going to go ahead and carry through this
process. Well, let me just say this real quick to Scotty. Thank you, Scotty. And Scotty, you're more than welcome to share your views and opinions at any time. I didn't feel like you were out of control or out of line in any kind of way. I always appreciate your comments, so no worries whatsoever. I am so not tripping. You're fine.
You know what? Right, because we have to learn. We have to learn to speak truth and to speak life to death. They've been speaking death to us for over 2,000 years. It's time that we speak life and truth to our situation.
True.
Yeah. All right,
Brother Brown, give us
libation. Okay. I now come in the name of my ancestors and my air conditioner speak.
Ashe.
I now pray the ancestors for giving us wisdom, knowledge, and understanding to come together on this program on a weekly basis to share the knowledge that have been imparted to us through the spiritual energies of our ancestors. Ashe.
Ashe.
I now thank Sister Asia, Sister Mother Dunning, Sister Hattie, and Black Rose for being strong Black women and understanding the Black men in their midst, and how we must pull together in unification and understanding that we all are in this struggle together, not to incorporate our struggle with people of other ethnic backgrounds, but to maintain our composure, our posture, our dignity, the infrastructure of our struggle, and best of all, to understand that we need to continue to be African people. Ashe.
Ashe. Ashe.
And now I just ask that the spirits of our ancestors who have gone before us will continue to rest upon us in a mighty way so that the work that we have been called to do can be to continue this work on this earth and lay a pathway for those who are coming behind us to follow and the Yoruba, which means independence and liberation of African people worldwide. Ashe.
Ashe.
Ashe. And Ashe.
Ashe. And Ashe. Thank you, Brother Brown. Thank you, Asha. Thank you, Mother Hattie. Thank you, Mother Dunning. And we thank our guests. And always thank you so much, Scotty, for engineering for us. And everybody have a wonderful, prosperous week filled with abundance.
All right, then.
Thank you.